from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll chat with Comedy Sports' Claire Welcher about her upcoming road trip around the country.
Room. I'll take a look at how educators and students are celebrating Music in Our Schools Month this March.
And I'll find out how Butler's Arts Fest is celebrating outlaws and outsiders. Plus, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. You might have seen Claire Welcher on stage at the Indie Fringe, the Phoenix Theater, Bob Directs, or Comedy Sports, where she's assistant artistic director. But soon, Claire is planning to take on one of her most challenging roles ever, an improv road trip to visit comedy sports outlets all around the United States. Sharon Gamble invited Claire in to talk about how this wacky idea came about, conquering her fear of RVs, and much, much more.
Okay, so Where did this idea come from? You're too young for a midlife crisis.
I know. Well, you know, it's kind of a combination of a few different things. I actually won the one of the Arts Council fellowships for creative renewal in the last cycle of grants. And with that money, I ended up taking a couple of pretty big trips out west. And I went to Yellowstone with my family, and I went to Zion National Park with one of my very close friends. And, you know, I went to Yellowstone, and it kind of sparked this wanderlust that had been really
kind of dormant.
Yes, huh? Very dormant. Yes, that's a good word for it. And I started kind of just dreaming about living more of an atypical life than I do here in Indianapolis, and wondering how I could do that while at the same time keeping ties to Indy and, of course, to Comedy Sports, which is just my second home, basically, and has been my family since 2004. So I just kind of started dreaming with this little seed of an idea, and here we are.
Now, for context, we should explain that your normal life in Indianapolis might be atypical for some people. Describe what you do.
That's a good point. I work for Comedy Sports Indianapolis as their marketing manager, as an assistant artistic director, and I'm also a performer there and have been for the last 10 years. So, yes, my life is not, you know, go to the office and grind it out for 8 hours and then head home with my briefcase and my files and things. And I also act on the side and write on the side, and I'm a very creative person. I'm kind of always going. But I thought, let's take it one step further. Why not see how else life can be lived, artistically as well?
Mm-hmm. And the idea of using all the Comedy Sports outlets, franchises, as kind of your framework, what caused you to do that?
Comedy Sports is a huge global family, basically. We have a once-a-year convention / summer camp / get-together that is just kind of the ultimate in good times. And it's a feeling that kind of buoys us all as players for the year, and we talk about it on these forums, and we're always excited to do that. So to be able to connect all of those cities in kind of one fell swoop was very appealing to me. And it's surreal to me that I'm going to be going to all these places and playing. And we all do Comedy Sports. If I go to Portland, Oregon, they will speak the same language that I do as far as improv and as far as comedy goes. But I also know that, you know, in Portland, their Comedy Sports is going to have a different place in their art scene than ours does here. So I wanted to talk about improv and how it fits into the arts and how we're kind of this under-the-radar art form that not a lot of people know about.
And, you know, it strikes me that maybe not all of our listeners have been to Comedy Sports. Shame on them.
Of course. But
give us a little context.
Sure. Well, it's basically competitive improvisational comedy. So we do short form games, which means you give us a suggestion and we take it for about 3 or 4 minutes and we build a game around it. And we do that in a format that is very unique in the improv world. You can go to Chicago, to I.O., or to Second City, and you'll see what's commonly known as long-form improv, where you get one suggestion and you basically riff on that one suggestion with your fellow actors for about 20 to 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. And in short form, you get a suggestion and you play a game around it for 3 minutes. And then we just combine a whole bunch of games for about an hour and a half and do kind of a whole big show that we call a match in comedy sports terms. We do it all competitively. So we have two teams competing and the audience gives the suggestions. They vote on the teams and they ultimately decide the winner. So it's this kind of unique whole package of a night out. It's exciting and it's appealing to everybody. And I think that's what's so cool about improv, and what is also sometimes so unknown about it is that it is so fun. It's so appealing. And I think some people just kind of miss out on it. If they're not familiar with it, they might be a little intimidated and think, it's not familiar for me. But it is. It's for everybody.
And the majority of your material is family friendly.
Correct. Yeah. We just rebranded, actually. The CSZ logo and brand name has just kind of reinvented itself. And we used to really go for the quote unquote family friendly. Mm-hmm. But we don't want it to only feel like it's just for kids, just for families. We have date night. We have bachelorette parties all the time. We mm-hmm. have shows that are for adults only. And most cities will offer shows that are for adults only as well, so that you can leave the kids at home if that is more your style. But we also want people to realize that it's universal and it doesn't have to be watered down. It doesn't have to be condescending comedy. It doesn't have to be dirty. It can just be plain old fun.
Sure.
Yeah.
Give a couple of examples of what some of the games might be.
Oh, sure. There are so many. Our signature game is a game called Five Things, and we play it nearly every match, and every city will know how to play a game of Five Things. And it's kind of a charade extreme game where I might get a suggestion and say, Sharon, give me a hobby or an activity. So just give me a hobby.
Knitting.
So knitting. Excellent. So we would have this improviser act out knitting and get someone else to guess knitting. However, we would make it a little bit harder. And I would say, instead of one of those knitting needles, name someone from history that's very famous.
Napoleon.
Excellent. So one of your knitting needles is Napoleon. The other knitting needle is going to be, give me an appliance from your kitchen.
Oh, I started to say iron. Toaster.
So your other knitting needle is a toaster. And also we're going to change where you would be knitting, typically in your living room, maybe in front of the television. But we're going to be at what tourist trap that you would never want to go to?
Eiffel Tower.
Excellent. The terrible Eiffel Tower that no one wants to go to. So we would be, no, it's fine. Some people don't want to go there. So we would be knitting with a knitting needle of Napoleon and the toaster at the Eiffel Tower. And that would all have to be mimed. And that is kind of, we have to think off the top of our heads of how can we show this? And I mean, that's pretty complicated stuff, but that is a very typical game that we would play. It's all very high energy and very fast paced and just crazy.
So these kinds of skills can also be used. Can we talk for a minute about the business applications?
Of course.
And because that might be not nearly as well known.
Oh, yes. And that's one thing that as a global brand, we have really tried to emphasize is that we don't just entertain, you know, every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We actually bring these skills to life, and we bring them to your working life, to your waking life, to any kind of communication or team building or management issues that you may be facing. We do these workshops all the time with different teams of people. I just actually last week taught a workshop with the Indiana Pacers sales team.
Really?
So yeah. So and we did it on the court at the Bankers Life Fieldhouse. It was so fun. But we take these teams of people and we show them that there are different skills and different philosophies behind the art of improv that you can apply to your working life in this context, of course, whether that be communication, whether it be problem solving, or just getting together and getting to know each other a little bit better. Because improv is kind of this all-inclusive thing that everyone is welcome and every idea is accepted and you don't say no. And for those, you know, 2 or 3 hours that we work with these people, we kind of get them to shift their thinking a little bit into this more positive headspace of, let's try these crazy ideas and what's the worst that could happen? It doesn't work out, and that's fine. So we like to talk about being free to fail and having fun while doing so.
And moving on.
And moving on, because it's not perfect ever.
So when you're working with somebody new, how long does it take you to kind of figure out oh, this is this kind of improviser?
Pretty much right off the bat.
Really?
Yeah. When you do it for a while, you can really kind of read people very quickly. And that's another one of those great just kind of side skills that comes with doing so much improv, because improv is 100% connection with another person. Mm-hmm. You can't do improv alone. That's when you want to do stand up. If you want to stand up and tell your jokes and hope that people laugh, you know, and you're up there kind of all by yourself and sink or swim. But improv, you have people around you and you form these instant skills and instant trust with the people around you. So you can read people pretty easily.
So the person you've just described yourself to be, mm-hmm. living in this world, deep in this world, mm-hmm. is going on the road alone, except for Sophie, your dog.
Yes, and a camera person.
Yes. Okay.
I don't have the skills. So yes, there will be another human being with me.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I was going to say, these skills might serve you well if you're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. And I wouldn't be afraid to go alone, I think, if I were out by myself. I'm certainly very independent, but I do need to have someone to document the entire process.
And the RV? Have you ever driven or ridden in an RV before?
I have ridden in one, yes. I've never driven one. But I have always been very, very drawn to them and the idea of this kind of tiny moving home and these miniature surroundings. It's very appealing to me. And just to live a little more simply and yet still do what I want to do and not, you know, cut ties with the world completely.
Yeah. What's the timing of your trip and what's your route?
I will be leaving January 9th. I'm leaving June the 9th for Quad Cities, Illinois, which is where our world championship will take place. Mm-hmm. And that's the convention I was kind of talking about earlier. And I'll be there for about a week with my fellow CSZ brethren. And that's kind of the launch of the trip. So mm-hmm. Once I leave Quad Cities on the 14th, I will drive to Richmond, Virginia, and go all the way up the East Coast to New York. And then kind of across the Great Lakes area, there's a whole bunch of cities around there that have Comedy Sports in them, or CSZs, I should say. Comedy Sports is the match that we play. CSZ is the name of the brand.
Oh,
but
the
Comedy
new
Sports
branding.
Is it? Yes, but Comedy Sports is much more familiar with people. So I'm still kind of using that. After all, it is called the Comedy Sports World Tour, not the CSZ World
right.
Tour. Then across the Great Plains. I don't know. There's a long stretch between Minnesota and then I go to Provo and then kind of up into the corner of Seattle and down California and then across to Texas, over to New Orleans and back up to Indianapolis.
Wow.
4 months.
Your cameraman, still photography or video or both?
Both. I'm going to document the whole thing and have a web series going on. So once a week, I'll have a short episode that highlights the city that I was just in with player interviews and talking to fans and just talking to people about how their comedy sports fits in to their arts lifestyle and how improv as a whole kind of helps us as human beings connect to each other and hopefully make some ties between those day-to-day connections and then the connections that I'm making across the country. So I'll be documenting it every day and having social media posts every day and just letting people really kind of be there with me and experience it all for the first time, because
sure.
I'll be doing it all on camera for the first time.
Yeah. Where did Comedy Sports originate?
In Milwaukee in 1984.
Okay, and that'll be one of your stops.
Yeah, oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Anything you're scared of on this trip?
The thing I'm really thinking about the most is logistics. And that by that I mean when I get to Boston, which is not known for very wide streets, where I will put the RV and then get around for a couple of days. But the beauty of all of that is the CSZ family is so big, and that in these cities, I have this whole kind of, you know, team of people that know that I'm coming, that are excited that I'm coming, and will say, I live in the burbs and I've got a driveway and
right.
you can park it and we'll take a train in, or I'll give you a ride, or you can borrow my skateboard or whatever.
Sure.
Hopefully the skateboard is not real, because I would that will be scarier than the RV to me. But that's kind of the beauty of it. But I would say my biggest fear right now is just getting those kinks worked out of where exactly am I going to put this thing. And when I was talking to a company called MacariosRV.com, and they're helping me out with some accessories and parts and kind of helping me with this whole process.
Sure.
I was asking them just some basic questions, and I said, well, I'm just nervous about passing someone on the highway if I have a really long vehicle. And he said, you're not going to be passing anyone. We're down the interstate. I've never thought
about
it that way.
That's good to know.
Yeah, and I kind of have a lead foot, so maybe this will calm that a little bit.
Sharon Gamble with actor and improv impresario Claire Wilcher. If you'd like to help fund Claire's comedy sports world tour adventure, you can visit Indiegogo.com and then search for Comedy Sports World Tour. Indiegogo.com, then /projects/comedy sports, or just search for comedy sports, and that's sports with a Z.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. March is Music in Our Schools Month, making this a great time to highlight the importance of music education, including lessons, concerts, and appreciation for all students. Travis DiNicola sat down with Lane Velayo, Executive Director of the Indiana Music Education Association, to learn more.
Lane, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to see you here.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me, Travis.
Absolutely. It is March, which means Music in Our Schools Month. I got to ask this. Was March selected because of the word march? I mean, you think of often music in our schools, we think of marching bands. You know, the first day of March is a complete sentence. March 1st, right?
You know, actually, we've had events in the past that have involved marching in March.
Nice. Okay.
But I can't say that there was any specific conscious effort to make March because of the double use of the word March as Music in Our Schools Month. It actually started in 1973 in New York, just a local celebration. It was a one-day type of thing. And as it sort of grew in popularity by 1985, it was recognized nationally as Music in Our Schools Month.
Okay.
And I think that that's just sort of how it took off. And over the 30 years, the program has really evolved. And our national affiliate, the National Association for Music Education, is the one that has really spearheaded that effort. And we as state affiliates sort of encourage our teachers to recognize this as an opportunity to really just push the importance of music education in the classroom and the benefits for student learners.
Now, of course, I want, and I think a lot of people would like music in the school every month and every day and every, you know, throughout the whole school year. But of course, by giving it a month, it gives you an opportunity to celebrate and call attention to it. What are some cool things that you're aware of that schools or students or educators are doing this month to celebrate music in our schools?
You know, that's a great question. There are a lot of schools that will use this as an opportunity to bring up the conversation locally in their school districts as part of performances or concerts that they'll do. Nationally, again, we do with the National Association for Music Education, and specifically the Give a Note Foundation, is what's called the Music in Our Schools Month Tour. And Indiana was really special this year because we actually got two tour stops, one in Hobart and one in Jeffersonville, right outside of Louisville. Recording artist named Ray Lynn, who her country single was recently number 3 on the iTunes charts as of last week, came in. And what happened was we had a couple elementary schools who submitted videos, and they were selected. They each received a $1,000 grant, and she came in and did a live performance, and the students were able to perform with her. It was just a great experience to see. So there are both national level and local level events that are happening all over the place as a result of this month, which are just sort of a great way to raise awareness.
Yeah. What does, I mean, I know obviously each school, each district is going to be different. You know, but I, of course, you know, still have these ideas of when I went to school and what music in school looked like. And, you know, singing some fun songs, you know, as a first, second grader, you know, learning the recorder when I was 4, had an opportunity to take some clarinet lessons, eventually joined the chorus. You know, I did that throughout high school. Other kids joined the band. You know, had some music appreciation classes in junior high school. Is that anything like what's going on now, or what do you see in most schools?
You know, a lot of those similar things are happening. Students have the opportunity in at least a robust music education environment to participate in all of those activities, or at least to have the chance to explore those opportunities, whether it's general music at the elementary level, mm-hmm. All the way through music theory and general music to the traditional band, choir, and orchestra. What is great is we're seeing a real opportunity for students to explore music technology as well as composition. So the offerings have become more sophisticated as the opportunities have as well. Those are varied, mm-hmm. and obviously sure. It depends on the school district.
Some schools have more resources.
Yeah, some schools have more resources, and we constantly are the ones who are advocating to ensure that music education remains robust. You know, with the economic downturn and with the continuous changes in how schools are funded or what funds are available to them, we have seen a little bit of a shrinkage in the number of opportunities, or at least in the number of that educator-to-student ratio, which is always really difficult when you balance that with the value of music education and what has been shown in the studies. So we continue to sort of advocate for music education as much as possible.
It must get a little frustrating because there have been studies that have been coming out, not just the past couple of years, the past 20 years or more, about the value of music education and how important it is for kids to have the opportunity to study music, and about how when a child takes up an instrument, that it also there's been correlations between increased math scores or better attendance or less likelihood to get into trouble in school or whatever it may be. I mean, there's been study after study about, look, if you know you want good kids in school, you know, get them in chorus, get them in band, whatever it may be, and give them that opportunity, and you're going to see improvement across everything they do in the school. And yet, of course, you know, then comes up the question, but music isn't tested, and you know, and so why are we teaching music? And I mean, it's got to be a little frustrating sometimes for you as a music educator who's advocating for this.
Sure. You know, obviously we'd love to see music education fully funded and in every way, shape, and form. You know, and the conversations that we have with legislators, mm-hmm. We don't find enemies of music education. I don't think there's anybody that's out there that's saying we need to cut music education. I think it's a matter of balancing the priorities that are out there. And, you know, one thing that we have really been pushing as part of the new advocacy plan with the National Association for Music Education is the argument called Broader Minded. Okay. And our listeners can go to www.broaderminded.com to learn a little bit more. But our new take on this is, yes, it is great that we support a lot of STEM areas through mm-hmm. the value of music education. And there are so many correlative studies that prove that. But I think that part of what gets lost in that conversation are the things that are untested and that
sure.
music education really brings to the student, that value of creativity, the value of teamwork, all of the things that create a whole and a well-rounded education mm-hmm. are some of the things that music education really brings to the table that are getting lost in this entire debate about, well, how do we fill in this bubble, or how do students fill in a bubble to test whether or not they're being more creative? And
sure.
our example is think beyond the bubbles here. How are students improving overall as a result of that creativity, as a result of all of the untested things that music education can bring to a well-balanced education?
And again, and that's the big part of it, well-balanced education. It's not necessarily, you know, expecting that every child's going to grow up to be a professional musician or what have you.
And the vast majority of students won't become professional musicians or music educators, but they will take with them a lifelong enjoyment of music. And we see that in those church choirs, in the community choirs. We see that in those community bands, or just in the number of people that come up to us after concerts and say, I remember when I was taught this, this, and this in my music education class,
sure.
or the memories that I have out of that. Those are fundamental building blocks that really make the American education system unique. But I think that it's something that has really made American graduates stand out when they do go into the workforce.
What can we do to ensure that there continues to be a wide variety and high quality of music education in the schools at all levels?
Sure. I think it is the knowledge that every one of us as parents, as community members, as engaged citizens can speak up and talk about how music education can and should be a priority as part of a well-balanced education.
Mm-hmm.
And that isn't necessarily just to at the federal level, but it's at with our state legislators, at the their House representatives or their senators, and as well as in their local school districts, with the superintendents and the principals and the school boards that you deal with on a daily basis, enforcing the notion that music education is something that we all value as part of a well-balanced education. We think it's important. We think that our students should have the opportunities to participate in it as fully as possible, while still making sure that they are trained to be able to graduate and be successful members of the workforce in math, science, education, or whatever they decide to do.
What about the kids, the students themselves? Is there ever an opportunity? I mean, this is sort of, a two-part question, because I have to wonder if, you know, shows like, you know, American Idol and The Voice and such, you know, really, you know, maybe inspire kids in a different way than the inspiration they get in school to say, I want to learn how to sing, or I want to sing better, or be a musician, or whatever it would be, and then go to their school and say, hey, how come I'm not getting these classes?
Yeah, you know, we see the excitement from these students about Glee and The Voice. They they mm-hmm. see all of these,
Glee,
these
of course.
Shows, yeah, absolutely, taking place, and they're wondering, how come these opportunities aren't available to me, or how do I get involved in more of these opportunities? So,
right, how can we put on a full-blown $100,000 musical in a week like they do in Glee? But what, well, maybe not.
Yeah, you know, a little bit of suspension of disbelief.
But okay, fair enough.
I think when you see some of the great show choir performances or marching band performances, the numbers of engaged students that are out there participating in these musical events, I think that Glee and The Voice and all of those, the sing-off, mm-hmm. have all been great ways to sort of be catalysts for that music education movement, but create more excitement, create that cool factor for why we
Absolutely.
Should be participating in those.
And you must partner also, I would imagine, with a lot of other organizations that do things, including all the band competitions and such. I mean, is that sort of something that the Music Education Association does?
Yeah, you know, we consider ourselves very active partners mm-hmm. with all of the music education organizations in the state. So anywhere from the Indianapolis Symphony to mm-hmm. Music for All and Bands of America to our counterpart, the Indiana State School Music Association, to our music retailers. You know, it's a small but very vast community of folks who are all really working to make sure that music education is wholly valued mm-hmm. and that students have as many enrichment opportunities as possible within music education. So we're thankful to all of them. And even at the national level, there are many organizations that are looking out at the state levels and at the local levels to say, how can we continue to support this? How do we ensure that every child has access, which is extremely important.
It is. Excellent. Lane, before I let you go, I got to ask you, what's your main instrument?
You know, I started playing piano when I was 5, mm-hmm. and I continue to do that this day, although I'm sure that my parents would say I still don't practice enough. But I currently actively sing with two groups. Mm-hmm. I have an a cappella group that I sing with, an All Guys group, and then Encore Vocal Arts, which is a local chamber choir.
Great organization.
Here in Indianapolis. Yes.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Lane, it's great to have you in here for Art of the Matter, and continue to keep celebrating Music in Our Schools Month throughout March. And really throughout the whole year.
Thank you so much.
Travis DiNicolo with Lane Velayo, Executive Director of the Indiana Music Education Association. March is Music in Our Schools Month. You can learn more about the Indiana Music Education Association at imeamusic.org. Once again, imeamusic.org. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Do you see all those eggs that are standing on end over there? Isn't
What does that mean?
It's an installation art exhibit to celebrate the equinox.
Is that what those are for?
That's what it's about.
I thought the Easter Bunny was like practicing his circus tricks.
Sure, and then we're going to scramble them and have ourselves a little brunch, right?
Of course. What? Oh.
And we're going to tell you some more arts things that are coming up on our calendar we call
What'll We Do? Well,
exactly.
Since we're speaking of eggs,
yes.
The first annual presidential special egg roll at the President Benjamin Harrison site is going to be taking place on Saturday, April 4th.
Charlie, hide you, funny man. Good for you.
This is very fun because, you know, there's always the White House traditional egg roll.
Right.
And so they're going to host their first annual egg roll on the South Lawn. And you can start your morning with a continental breakfast and some crafts and a visit with the Easter Bunny. And there'll be a special narrator there who's going to be sharing stories about presidential pets for all the kids who are in attendance. And then afterwards, the lush green lawn and gardens become the perfect venue for an extraordinary egg hunt and roll. So that should be a ton of fun. Some very old-fashioned fun. Again, that's on Saturday, April 4th, starting at 8:30 at the Benjamin Harrison Presidential site. You do need to register ahead of time, so go to their website, which is bhpsite.org, and register you and your kids to roll some eggs.
I'm relatively sure those eggs won't stand on egg end because I think those are probably hard boiled.
One hopes so. Yeah. That could get messy.
Hey, if you've always accepted the notion, it's kind of a romantic notion, that it's noble or necessary to sacrifice material well-being to be an artist, listen up. You need to pay attention to this series of workshops. The Heron Alumni Association is inviting you. It's a special business accelerator series. Workshops on April 16th, 23rd, and 30th from 5:30 to 7:30. The facilitator is Sandy Ballard, who has a BFA from Heron, and she's figured out how to talk with artists about making business plans and making their artistic business financially powerful. So you can find out more about that if you go online to myiupui.com/excel. myiupui.com/excel. And you probably want to do that the first week of April, if not sooner.
Very cool. Hey, this is the last week to register for the community arts classes that VSA are offering. It is their spring session that's going to be coming up. And you can register now online on their website, vsai.org. And these classes are for all ages and for students of all abilities. You can explore different mediums, clay and painting and collage in their studios at the Harrison Center. And the studios feature adaptive equipment and trained teaching artists to ensure access for all. And what's really great is parents and siblings are welcome to take classes together. So if someone in your family has special needs, you could take a class with them as well, which could be a very cool thing. Worth checking out at VSA.
In addition to this weekend, the fact that we're celebrating the spring equinox, also March really is Women's History Month, and the Idlejorg is celebrating by hosting the Idlejorg Museum Women in Art Market. You can see and buy one-of-a-kind handmade artwork from more than 40 regional artists, including works in basketry, jewelry, fiber art, sculpture, ceramics, painting, photography, and as they say, more. This takes place this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Idlejorg. And you can also, while you're there, enjoy guided tours of the museum focused on the work of female artists. So great time to visit the Idlejorg for the Idlejorg Museum Women in Art Market this Saturday from 10 to 5.
Something else you might want to look at this weekend, it's the last weekend for the annual Indiana Flower and Patio Show at the State
Aww.
Fairgrounds. Yeah, and there's also some other fun things you might want to check out when you're there, including the flea market or the antique advertising show, the log and timber home show. My goodness, there's so many things going on at the State Fairgrounds this weekend.
Murder, dragons, lust.
At the State Fairgrounds?
No,
somewhere else.
If you're a Game of Thrones fan, I had you at Murder, Dragons, and Lust. But you can enjoy a comedy sports take on Game of Thrones. They're doing their late night series, which is not, what would we say? Not necessarily family friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And they're using the theme of Game of Thrones, the wildly popular HBO series, for their improv structure. So,
fun.
Late night, Shame of Thrones, an improvised parody every Friday in April at Comedy Sports.
Nice. Well, you can always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website, or just listen to Sharon and I next week on that calendar that we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
If you've always felt like an outlaw or an outsider, this year's Butler Arts Fest is right up your alley. The April 9th through 19th festival features more than 50 theater, visual art, film, and music events organized around the Outlaws and Outsiders theme. Sharon Gamble invited Jordan College of Arts Dean Ron Caltabiano in to learn about some of the festival's highlights.
Outsiders and Outlaws. I put the Outlaws first. Looking at you.
It actually is. Outlaws and Outsiders.
Outlaws and Outsiders. Okay. Where did this kind of radical idea come from?
You know, we do some really good thinking on our themes for Butler Arts Fest. And one of the ideas that we got back was the old concept of the other, which has lots of philosophy behind it.
Sure.
And you know, that wasn't exactly right for us, but we were intrigued by the concept in general, and we played with it, and we morphed that into Outlaws and Outsiders, which just gives us tons of possibilities.
Yeah, it's so fun. Outlaws, outsiders, rebels, outliers. Yeah.
Yeah.
There are a lot of philosophies in the arts about how useful it is to be an outsider.
Well, it absolutely is not only useful, but it's almost a requirement. You know, in a good deal of society, people want to fit in or feel like they need to fit in. But if you're an artist, you want to fit out.
Did you just coin that?
I did. You want to be your own voice and make your own statement and then have that voice of yours succeed or fail on its own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what the artists at Butler Arts Fest are this year. They are the artists and the performers that have struck out on their own and that have a wonderful, unique voice. We have focused on those this year.
We can't talk about every single event because there are so many, but I want to start with Crime and Punishment. And what a theatrical opportunity for Butler students.
Oh, my, yes. So we have this this huge Dostoevsky novel, and we have created a new adaptation of that piece, and we've gotten it down to 80 minutes, which is something like 10 minutes for every 100 pages of the novel.
Wow. That's impressive.
You know, we have on our faculty some great Russian actors and acting teachers.
Right.
We think this is a terrific opportunity for our students to work from teachers from the source who grew up in Russia and studied Russian theater. And I think this is going to be a terrific opportunity. We do something like 9 performances during the course of Arts Fest, most in the evening, of course, but also a good number during the day for high school kids.
You know, and a challenge, too, because so much of that novel is about internal monologue, about internal thoughts.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And how do you turn that into a theatrical production?
Yeah.
Well, come and see.
Come and see, exactly. There is one of the things I like about Arts Fest is, and about your programming in general on the Butler campus is that you push out not only students onto the stage, but faculty. Quite regularly, and I'm looking forward to the chamber music concert coming up on April 12th.
Great.
Tell us about Tanya Leon.
Tanya Leon. She is not a Butler faculty member, but she is well featured. Tanya is Afro-Cuban composer, and her music very much fits into that unique voice, that outsider voice. And when you listen to her fascinating, wonderful music, you hear Latin influence, you hear some African rhythmic influence, and what comes out is something like no other composer. And it's intriguing. It keeps you on the edge of your seat. It is totally entertaining at the same time. And you know, when we do these two great pieces of hers for solo piano, not only will we hear them, but we're going to have a talk about them rather simultaneously. So we have a great musicologist, that Jim Briscoe, that's going to talk about some of the music. We'll hear an excerpt. He'll talk more. We'll hear an excerpt. And then finally, we'll hear the entire performance at the end. So it's not a regular recital, although about half of the program will be. Mm-hmm. The second half of the program is this rather interesting idea of talking about the music and hearing the music.
Yeah.
And it's about this kind of fascinating, rhythmic, driving music that I think the entire audience is going to really, really enjoy.
Even if they maybe don't know this composer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Get yourself exposed to something new. Okay, so I have to ask, how did Richard Rodgers get into this this whole umbrella of outlaws and outsiders?
Well, Richard Rodgers himself is not much of an outsider, right?
Right.
He may be the consummate insider in terms of writing for Broadway. But when you look at the pieces that are in his musicals, there very often is that outsider character or that outlaw character.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't want to give away too much, but I will say that we're doing the entire ballet from Stoller, called Stoller on Fifth Avenue, which is very much about outlaws and the outsider concept. And really pretty much hits very hard. And if you look at, well, it hits very hard while there's tap dancing and song and dance on stage. and you know, that ought to be a very entertaining night for just everybody.
Yeah, yeah. I have to ask, too, about, this is an art form I'm not familiar with, Jagged, a contemporary pole dance company?
Yeah, indeed.
What is a pole dance company?
Well, pole dancing comes from the Cirque du Soleil-ish element in dance, right? From dancers being flown from the stage, and also from poles that are fixed from the floor and the ceiling, and so the dancers work on the poles either singularly or several dancers on a single pole to do some rather magical work. Yeah,
I'm trying
indeed.
To think, have you flown people in Schrott yet?
Last year.
Yeah, okay.
When in fact we had a Cirque du Soleil dancer.
That's right.
And you know, Jagged is part of our Film Plus series as well. So when you come on that night, you'll see a film that is sponsored by the Heartland Film Festival called Off the Floor, which is about the Jagged Contemporary Dance, pole dance company, and the struggles they've had with the fact that many people associate pole dancing with old-fashioned men's clubs. And that all that sexist thing. And the fact that, of course, it is not. It is about art and about physicality.
Sure.
And darn hard
work. And the gymnastics of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so we show this fantastic film about their work and their struggle to be taken seriously as an art form. And then we bring the company themselves onto the stage for a full performance.
That's a treat.
It's going to be great.
Fun. So I'm sure you've had a bunch of inquiries already about the Angela Brown and Friends Mad Scenes concert.
Yeah. Well, you know, Angela was at Arts Fest last year, and she's such a fixture in Indianapolis. She's, oh my goodness, she's a wonderful woman. And now, now Angela is on faculty at Butler, I am so delighted to say. And in talking about a reappearance at Arts Fest, we wanted to do something different. So last year she did Porgy and Bess mm-hmm. with us. So she and some of her Butler colleagues and colleagues from the Indianapolis Opera are picking out some great mad scenes. Now, we might take, for example, the seduction scene at the end of the second act of Tosca,
uh-huh.
Which is incredibly dramatic and ends with a murder and, oh my.
Blood-curdling.
It is indeed. And so Angela has put together a program of scenes like that and a few other less blood-curdling scenes to make a wonderful recital program for us. It'll be a great treat.
Including Peter Grimes. I'm excited about that.
That's not Angela. That's Tom Studebaker from Butler's faculty
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
doing the mad scene from Peter Grimes where he... Well, obviously he's gone a bit crazy, and likewise he's being told to commit suicide by sailing his boat out to sea and sinking it.
Wow!
Yeah,
I love Peter Grimes, and I'm delighted to see it represented in that concert. Tell us about the Sierra Leone Refugee All-Stars.
Yeah, my goodness. What an amazing story they have. In around 1999, during the Sierra Leone Civil War, many people fled the country.
Mm-hmm.
And among the diaspora were many musicians. And a group of musicians found themselves in Guinea in 1999 and 2000 and formed a band. They had not known each other beforehand.
Mm.
And, you know, what do you know? They found themselves to be quite a darn good band. And now they are performing all around the world, and they call themselves Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars. I, in fact, heard them in San Francisco last year. I was blown away by them. It is great West African rock. People are going to be wanting to get up and dance at the Schrott when they perform. It is bound to be fantastic. And in fact, that's another part of our Film Plus series. We open with a 35-minute documentary about the formation of that band in West Africa.
I love the way you're incorporating even more film this year into the whole
process.
This
is the first year the film has been part of Arts Fest, and we're delighted. We think it's a great feature.
And there's a chance to see The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and Bonnie and Clyde, and Pump Up the Volume.
That's right.
Over at the Toby.
Those are at the Toby. So we have a partnership with the Indianapolis Museum of Art this year, which I'm just delighted about. A couple of those are at the Toby, and one of them, in fact, is at the parking garage at the IMA.
Really?
And that is...
That's Pump Up the Volume, right?
Pump Up the Volume, right? And I can't wait for that.
And that's your partnership with Classical Music Indy.
Indeed. Classical Music Indy is working with us and with the IMA to provide some of the music. That is going with these Film Plus. That's the plus part of the Film Plus series at the IMA.
People who know Butler's arts faculty probably have noticed that we haven't mentioned one of the original outlaws / outsiders, and that's Michael Shelley. But he's
Mike.
Very much a part of this.
He is indeed. Mike is one of our commissioned composers. Butler Arts Fest commissioned Michael Shelley this year to write one of our one-act operas. So we have a night called Stark Raving, at which we are doing three one-act operas. One of them is somewhat known and has been done in Indianapolis. It's Peter Maxwell Davis's Eight Songs for a Mad King.
Mm-hmm.
We are bringing... quite a star from New York, Richard Armstrong, to Indianapolis to sing this. He's one of the originators of the role. We are also doing Maxwell Davis's Miss Donathorne's Maggot, which is the Miss Havisham story, complete with her wedding cake still there, and mm-hmm. Miss Havisham in her wedding dress some 50 years after the wedding. Mm. Stark Raving is right. And this great piece by Michael Shelley that I have seen. The score is on my desk. It is a fascinating piece on the last days of Al Capone. And Al Capone did not die a sane man.
Sharon Gamble with Butler University Jordan College of Arts Dean Ron Caltabiano. Butler's 2015 Arts Fest is April 9th through the 19th on Butler's campus and beyond. You can plan your Outlaws and Outsiders tour at butlerartsfest.com. Again, that's butlerartsfest.com.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll listen to what Storytelling Arts is up to this spring.
I'll chat with Andrew Lyons, music director, about his search for a new music director job.
And I'll get a preview of the State Museum's Art Meets News exhibit. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar that we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.